Right now, I'm very happy to welcome back to our program good friend Kim Ives, an editor with the Haiti Liberté newspaper. He's a radio host on WBAI in New York City and a documentary filmmaker. Kim, thank you so much for making time to come on our program again tonight. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott. It's good to be back.
Hey, I've been asking all of our guests, and I wanted to ask you how you, your family, friends, coworkers are all coping with this pandemic health crisis. Everybody's got a different story. Everybody's got different experiences and networks of friends and family that have been affected. How are you making out?
Well, we have managed so far. I think I had COVID early on back in March when I was coming back from Haiti and the Dominican Republic, and I think I contracted it on the flight back when a steward sneezed not too far from my face. But in any case, it wasn't too bad for me, just a couple of days of fever and cough. And if I did have it, I was at the point where testing was unavailable practically. And we'll never know for sure, but it sure was all the classic symptoms. But otherwise, here in the Haitian community in New York, we've lost several doctors who apparently were unaware of the virus's danger, and they bit the dust. And in Haiti, the pandemic has not had quite the same impact as in the neighboring Dominican Republic, which, of course, has many more tourists and so forth. But some people attribute it to the fact that the Haitian population is about 50% under the age of 25, and others to traditional remedies like rum and grapefruit and lemon. But in any case, the pandemic here in New York, where I've been mostly based for the last year, unusually, because usually I am traveling down that way several times, but I've been pretty much grounded by the circumstances. And here in New York, the community, many of whom work as frontline health workers in some of the hospitals like Kings County, Downstate, and a few others here in Brooklyn and Queens, have been hit. But generally, the community is being very careful and wearing their masks.
No, that's all important information. Thank you for sharing that about the COVID crisis. And one other question on COVID in Haiti. You know, there's a real class divide in terms of the distribution of vaccines to countries around the world, and Haiti being one of the poorest nations in this hemisphere. How are they set in terms of receiving vaccines? We'll be talking about the politics of the moment, but of course, this is really important as well.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a great deal of skepticism in Haiti about the vaccine in general. You know, many people feel suspicious of Western medicine and Western solutions, and feel that they, with their herbs, they have what you call a Dr. Fei, leaf doctors, who claim to be more effective and powerful in solving some of these things. But many of the clinics in Haiti were empty of patients, of the COVID clinics that were set up afterwards, and some attribute that to that skepticism. So with the vaccine right now, Haiti does not have vaccines, at least that I'm aware of or that I've read about, available anyway. So we'll wait and see if they do arrive. We know that on the neighboring island of Cuba, they are about to roll out a vaccine. And of course, the Chinese and Russians are making theirs available to other countries in the world. So Haiti, it looks like it'll probably be pretty far down the list of the close to 200 nations of the world, which are anxiously awaiting the vaccine's arrival.
Yeah, disturbing but not surprising. Kim, there have been massive protests across Haiti in response to the incumbent president, Jovenel Moise, refusing to step down on February 7th. And that's attributable to his term ending, but his refusal to step down. Tell us a little bit about the details here in terms of why There have been these protests. Moïse, as I understand it, has been ruling by decree for some time after dissolving parliament or large sections of the parliament, and no elections have been held in recent years. It's a lot to cover, but maybe you could summarize the crisis at the moment there in Haiti.
Okay, well, really, I guess the best way to look at this is over the course of the last 35 years. That is, it was February 7th, 35 years ago, that Jean-Claude Duvalier fled Haiti on a U.S.-supplied C-130 with his sports cars and his wife's mink coats to a golden exile in France. And that was really considered the beginning of the modern Haitian democratic era. And ever since, inaugurations of the president are supposed to take place on February 7th. Well, there was a lot of struggle for 5 years after Jean-Claude left, and it wasn't until February 7th, 1991, that President Jean-Bertrand Aristide was sworn in. He was, as most of your listeners I'm sure know, a liberation theologian priest and anti-imperialist and not Washington's pick. They had been backing a World Bank economist, and so they were very vexed, and this was the first big malfunction of U.S. electioneering, and really the first we could say political revolution in the pink wave that swept over Latin America in the next 20 years with Hugo Chavez and Evo Morales and Rafael Correa and others. So during the next 20 years, from 91 to 2011, there were essentially four governments, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, his close associate, René Préval, then Jean-Bertrand Aristide and René Préval. Under the Constitution, a president can't serve consecutive terms, but he can serve two. So this was kind of the Lavalas period, and there were many advances made in terms of literacy, in terms of schools, in terms of recognizing, for instance, neighboring Cuba, who brought doctors over and trained doctors. And so it was very fraught, however, because there were, during that same 20 years, two coups and two military occupations by first U.S., French, and Canadian troops, and then U.N. troops. So it was, despite these coups and occupations, that there were advances made by the Haitian people. However, the terrible 7.0 magnitude earthquake of January 12, 2010, offered an opportunity for the U.S. To come in and change that situation. And in the elections of late 2010 and 2011, they intervened forcibly to insert neo-Duvalierist rulers, a new neo-Duvalierist party called the Haitian Bald-Headed Party, PHTK, into power in the form of a ribald compas singer named Michel Martelly. And he ruled from 2011 to 2016. He didn't hold elections either. There was a big mess. People rose up. He had to step down in 2016. But then there was a one-year transitional government. But then he was able to pass the baton to his protege, who is Jovenel Moïse, who came in. Now, this is where it gets a little complicated for people to understand. All during this period, these past 10 years, from 2011, when Martelly came in, till today, has been practically one protracted period of demonstrations, people in the streets all the time. The election of 2015 that Martelly held was so flawed and so problematic that it had to be reheld in 2016. And it was on November 20th, 2016, that Jovenel Moïse was once again won what was basically a rigged election by almost all accounts. And less than 20% of the population even took part in it. So it was a boycotted rigged election. Now, the Haitian Constitution says clearly that the president is supposed to be sworn in after 5 years. And if he's not sworn in on February 7th, he will be sworn in afterwards, but it will count as if he started on February 7th of the year of the election. So since the election was November 20th, 2016, his real start date was February 7th, 2016, according to the Constitution. However, Jovenel is saying, no, I get 5 years. Because that's what presidents get. And yet he was using the same math to disband the parliament on January 13th, 2020. And that is why he's been ruling by decree. Now, ruling by decree, and the U.S. even said this today in a statement at the U.N., where they were saying, when you're ruling by decree, you're just supposed to use decrees to get certain caretaking jobs done. But what has he been doing? He's been firing Supreme Court justices. He's been setting up a new Gestapo, what he calls the National Intelligence Agency, which is there to spy and arrest people and do a number of other, set up provisional electoral councils, which he has no right to do, and finally to rewrite the Constitution, which is exactly what Duvalier did back in the beginning of his 30-year dynasty that he set up. So basically, this looks like Duvalierism is being returned to Haiti from this neo-Duvalierist party and clique, and the Haitian people are standing up. The opposition, which is the main one pushing against or has been pushing against this on the political sphere, is very compromised. Many of the people in it were former allies of Jovenel Moïse, who ended up being double-crossed or ending up at odds with him for one reason or another. And so the Haitian people are not fully confident in them. However, they do want Jovenel out. This is pretty universal across the country, despite various bribes and patronage that Jovenel's been dishing out across the country, thanks to the money being funneled to him by Washington via Taiwan, which has a number of other projects in the country. Haiti is one of only 15 countries in the world that recognize Taiwan as a nation, and so they get some bribes from that. And apparently some of the Gulf monarchies are kicking in some money to them. Probably that was during the Trump era that they arranged that. In any case, all of this is to say that there is now a real standoff. Yesterday, Sunday, there was, for the second Sunday in a row, massive demonstrations, thousands in the street demanding Jovenel go, but he is saying, I'm staying. The State Department, it's not clear which way they're going. Just last week, the Under Secretary of State for Western Hemispheric Affairs, Julie Chung, put out a tweet where she said she was alarmed by what she said were authoritarian and undemocratic measures. But they have stopped short of Washington has stopped short of giving Jovenel the old heave-ho. And part of that is because the last time there was an opposition and civil society provisional government put in place, which is what the opposition and the people are demanding now, the result was Jean-Bertrand Aristide. So they certainly don't want to repeat that mistake and underestimate the power of the Haitian people to find their way. And so this is what we are really seeing, is a sort of a three-way standoff with Jovenel and the neo-Duvalierists he represents standing off against the Haitian people and the opposition, with the U.S. basically backing Jovenel for the moment, although they may switch to the opposition if the stakes get too high or if Jovenel starts to wobble.
Thank you for that excellent summary, Kim. We're speaking with Kim Ives, an editor with the Haiti Liberté newspaper, radio host on WBAI in New York City, documentary filmmaker, and we're talking about the current crisis in Haiti. Kim, in a recent article you wrote that the Biden administration has its finger in the air, has its finger in the wind, really, to see which way things are blowing in Haiti in terms of popular opposition to Jovenel Moïse. With the major demonstrations that have occurred in recent days, do you suppose that may affect where they eventually go in terms of support or opposition to Moïse staying in power?
Well, yes, that's going to be the main thing, because if they are faced with a revolutionary situation, one where they would lose ni sac ni crab, both the bag and the crabs in it, as they say in Creole, they will shift to this opposition, which has a lot of Washington-friendly politicians in it, but they are against Jovenel. And so it's possible that they could switch over to that opposition, and that will depend if Jovenel starts to lose his grip. But right now, Jovenel has been extremely useful to them under Trump. He was more or less brought into the Lima group, this gaggle of pro-Washington client states, which are basically targeting Venezuela. And so Haiti, which was basically supported by Venezuela from 2008 to 2018 through a fund called the Petrocaribe Fund, where Venezuela, in a sign of solidarity initiated by Hugo Chavez, gave Haiti about 20,000 barrels of oil a day, and Haiti only had to pay for 60% of it, and 40% went into a fund called the Petrocaribe Fund, which could be used to build roads, hospitals, schools, anything that would serve the Haitian people's interests. Well, about $2 billion of this money was essentially stolen by the Martelly and Jovenel Moïse group. And the Haitian people, this is one of the motivations behind their mobilization, because they have one of their calls, where is the Petrocaribe money, which has been stolen by this clown mafia, which is in control. So Washington, you know, is of two minds. On the one hand, Jovenel has been very useful as a total handmaiden to their campaign against Venezuela. And on the other hand, they are aware that the Haitian people are hopping mad against him and, you know, really want him out. So, their finger is in the wind, as you say, and they are watching it closely. But right now, despite stern words, as I say today, the UN representative, the U.S. representative at the UN, you know, sort of scolded Jovenel, who was by video link at the Security Council meeting, but at the same time essentially just said, hold elections as soon as possible, hold elections as soon as possible. Well, the Haitian people and the opposition don't trust Jovenel to hold elections, especially since he says, I'm going to rewrite the Constitution before I hold elections. Again, totally illegal. And so we'll see how this all unfolds, but it is an extremely volatile situation.
Well, Kim, I wanted to ask you about popular movements in the opposition. What, if anything, remains of the La Valas coalition that supported Jean-Bertrand Aristide when he was in power and, despite the coups, survived in some form? What are the progressive forces in Haiti in the opposition look like these days?
Well, it's a fractured and mixed bag, and people who kind of want to understand that a little can go to an article I wrote about a year ago in Rupture magazine, an online magazine, about what I call Haiti's second social revolution. The Lavalas sector remains. It is there, but it is in some ways one of the more conservative and moderate sectors of the, the leadership is some of the more conservative and moderate in the opposition. It's not always very clear with the Lavalas family party in particular where they stand. They are part of the principal opposition front, a thing called DIRPOD, in the form of a guy called Schiller Louis Dor, and a few of the sort of second-tier leaders like René Timothée, René Seville, and these others who are part of this opposition front. However, the official leadership of the party is always kind of keeping a distance, arm's length from the main opposition group. And for instance, while the main opposition group is pushing for a Supreme Court head to take over as the provisional president, the Lavalas party is calling for a government of national salvation with an unidentified leader to be appointed. They don't go into specifics how they see that happening. So furthermore, the Lavalas party sort of splintered about 3 or 4 years ago with a charismatic senator named Moïse Jean-Charles, who took a good part, maybe half, of the Lavalas party's base with him. And he is more radical, more, confrontational with the power, you know, speaks out clearly, but has been fairly contradictory, shall we say, in the terms of his alliances that he's made often with a very right-wing politicians. He would say that it's jeu d'intelligence, a game of intelligence, as Aristide would say when he's done such kind of alliances. But in all cases, those have sort of rebounded negatively on Moïse Jean-Charles. But he remains also one of the leading opposition figures. The left, more classically defined, is still fragmented, which you would expect after 30 years of ruthless assault by the empire. You have one sort of coalition called the MPDP, the Popular Movement for Democracy and Progress, which is kind of, I would call, the professional opposition. That is, they don't seem to really be seeking state power as much as just voicing their dissent and resistance and disapproval of what the government is doing. They rely more on social movements. They tend to have a more sort of Zapatista approach, shall we say, where they want to set up an alternate world. And at the head of that are people like Kami Chalmers and the peasant leader, Chaban Jean-Baptiste, etc. And on the other hand, you have more traditional sort of Leninist left associated and working in the background of Haiti Liberté, the paper I work for, and its allied groups. So that's more or less the configuration of the left and the opposition to Jovenel right now. There is no standout, clear, undisputed leader. It is still a bit of a free-for-all with alliances which come together, sometimes last for a month or two, then fall apart and then come back together. So it's very much a fluid situation, and one which is constantly in motion.
Well, Kim, we only have about a minute or so left, and sorry to do this to you, but maybe you can briefly talk about, if you would, the opposition to the Moïse administration, the Moïse regime in Haiti in Congress right now. Senator Patrick Leahy, Representative Andrew Levin, that you've written about, are part of that opposition. What, if anything, can Congress do to push the Biden administration to take a more active role in promoting democracy in Haiti?
Well, yes, the opposition, I would agree, does have the ear of the congressional Democrats, the progressive ones, Levin, Leahy, a number of others on the Black Caucus. Maxine Waters, of course, has always been very close to Jean-Bertrand Aristide in the Lavalas party. She was flew over to the to Africa to rescue him from the Central African Republic back in 2011, and also has stood by him and traveled with Danny Glover to Haiti and to his foundation last year or 2 years ago now. So this pressure may have some effect on the Biden administration. I mean, Biden doesn't seem to be very much care what the left or dissidents think about things. He's clearly not shown that he's too worried about any of that. But we'll see. But in any case, yeah, these voices and the statements by Leahy, by Levin, Meeks, a few of the others, I think. We'll see if AOC and the Squad and some of the others, Bernie Sanders, come on board. But definitely there is a push, especially at the grassroots, to try to get the congressional Democrats out in support of the Haitian people and the call for Jovenel to respect the Constitution and step down.
Well, Kim, thank you, as always, for, very complete and urgently needed history lesson about modern politics in Haiti, as well as the U.S. role there. And we'll look forward to our next conversation. Please leave our listeners with the web address for your newspaper there, Haiti Liberté.
Well, it's Haiti Liberté, one word, E on the end, not a Y, .com. You can follow our articles. We come out every Wednesday, the full paper, which can also be subscribe to if you are inclined to read things on the old format. But there is a flipping book of the paper also online, but all the articles are there in HTML form. So please check it out.
Thanks, as always, Kim. Be well. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott. Glad to be on your show from time to time.
Thank you, Kim. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye. That's Kim Ives, an editor with the Haiti Liberté newspaper. He's also got a radio show in New York City on WBAI.